26 today, and we're going to be looking at Isaac's journey to Gerar. And if we remember where we've left off, so the last thing that we saw was Esau selling his heritage, his birthright, to Jacob. And if you remember, Zach went over, he sold it for a bowl of stew. I think Zach said a crock pot full of stew is what he sold it for. So that's what we've seen. That's where we've left off, is Jacob now has that birthright. And it almost looks like we're kind of going backwards here, but we're not. This is still after Jacob and Isaac are alive, but we're seeing some things happening with Isaac here. When we get to the end of this the chapter here, we're going to have two verses that almost kind of seem out of place because it's going to talk about Esau. But just remember, this is going on. Jacob and Esau have been born at this point. We're just looking at Isaac in this chapter. So Genesis chapter 26, verse 1. That's where we're going first. Genesis chapter 26, verse 1. Okay, so 26, verse 1. And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar. So one of the first things we can take from this is there's a famine going on in the land. And this kind of explains what happened with Jacob and Esau. That Esau went out hunting, and this is why he wasn't able to get anything while he was hunting. There was a famine going on in the land. So we kind of see that's why he was willing to sell his birthright. Now this famine is actually about 100 years after the famine that we saw in the time of Abraham. And we're going to see a lot of parallels between what happens with Isaac here and what happened with Abraham, but we've got to remember that that time period has passed. And when we see Abimelech here, Abimelech is not a name. It's a title, like Pharaoh or king. So the Abimelech that we see here is not the same Abimelech that we saw with Abraham. Back in Genesis chapter 20, verse 2, it said, "And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister, and Abimelech king of Gerar sent and took Sarah." So we see the same title back in that chapter, but it's not the same person. Like I said, 100 years have passed here. Now it says that he's going to Gerar. Gerar is on the way to Egypt. It's one of the southern cities of the Philistines. And we think the Philistines may have actually migrated from the area of Egypt. So Isaac is headed towards Egypt when he came to Gerar. He's following the same thing that Abraham did. And we'll go over that in just a minute. So verse 2. "And the Lord appeared unto him and said, Go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of." So, again, we're seeing that Isaac is headed to Egypt, and God's telling him, don't go to Egypt. Now, we've talked about this a couple times. There's different names that are translated as Lord or God in the Bible. Here it is Yahweh, God in relation to covenants, always going back to the promises and covenants. And we know that he's made covenants with Abraham, so that should give us a little clue what's going to be going on here. It's going to tie back to that promise and oath that he made to Abraham. But we see it says that go not down into Egypt. He's telling Isaac to stay place. This is in contrast, back in Genesis chapter 12, verse 10, it said, "And there was a famine in the land," just like what we see now, "and Abram," his name even hadn't been changed yet, he wasn't Abraham, just Abram, "went down into Egypt." So back when Abram was dealing with a famine, God led him to Egypt. He's telling Isaac to stay place here. So what it's going to show is that Isaac's going to stay place in the land of the famine, and God's going to provide for him. God's going to have his back and give him what he needs, even being there where the famine is. So verse 3. "Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee." God's saying, I will be with you here, "and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father." That's why the name there was Yahweh in relation to covenants and promises, because we see he's saying, I'm going to uphold that for you. So God's saying, don't be distressed, don't be concerned. I'll be with you and I'll bless you here. Now, this covenant or this oath, we see it being repeated through the generations. So with Abraham, back in Genesis chapter 13, verse 15, he said, "For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever." Then we see here in Genesis chapter 26, verse 3, he's kind of repeating the same thing to Isaac. And in a few weeks, when we get to Genesis chapter 28 and verse 13, he tells Jacob, "And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham thy father and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it and to thy seed." So we see, again, that's why Yahweh is used. God in relation to covenants and promises, and he's repeating it to every generation. I haven't forgotten this promise, and it is going to come to pass. And this will be the start of some of that. That's why Isaac can stay where the famine is and still be blessed. Now, what we can also take from that is we don't see these promises repeated to Esau. It's only to Jacob. We don't see it repeated to Reuben or to any other. The only time we will see these covenants repeated and given directly to someone is the lineage through which Christ comes, that bloodline. So the promise is made because the end of that promise, the fulfillment, is Jesus. So the promise is always repeated to that lineage. So Jacob is the father that they will come through, so it's repeated to him, not Esau. So just keep that in mind. So moving on to verse 4 here. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Again, repeating that covenant to Isaac that he made to Abraham. Verse 5. We need to pay attention to something here. So let's look at this. Why was this covenant upheld? Why was the promise still being repeated and given to him? We see the answer here. Because that Abraham obeyed my voice, that's one, and kept my charge, that's two, my commandments, three, my statutes, four, and my laws, five. Five my's repeated there for emphasis. Now, in biblical numerics, five is grace, the grace of God. By doing these five things, God bestowed grace upon Abraham and his lineage. Now, what does it say there? So, his charge, that's something to be observed. His commandments, that's something to be obeyed. His statutes are something to be acknowledged, and the laws are to be followed. But one of the most important things we see there, it says, to follow my voice, to listen to God. Well, we kind of touched on this during the Bible study this past Thursday. But how do we hear the voice of God? How do we listen to him? We can see that here in Romans chapter 10, verse 17. So then faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. If you want to hear the voice of God, go to the word. That is his voice. That's how we can follow that. Listen to his voice by studying the word. So Genesis chapter 26, verse 6. And Isaac dwelt in Gerar. So he did what God told him. He didn't continue on to Egypt. He stayed in that area. Verse 7. And the men of the place asked him of his wife, and he said, she is my sister, for he feared to say, she is my wife, lest, said he, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon. Now this should seem pretty familiar here. He's following right in his father's footsteps of, I've got a really beautiful wife. I'm going to say she's my sister so they won't kill me for her. So this kind of shows us that Isaac was willing to follow whatever Abraham had laid out, just like he was following his footsteps to Egypt until God intervened. Now he's like, well, I'm going to say she's my sister, so that way we don't have an issue there. So verse 8. And it came to pass, when he had been there a long time. Now, take notice of that. This isn't the next day after they stayed in that area. They've been there for a while. That Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. Now, that word sporting there means caressing, okay? So, think about what Abimelech's seeing here, the king looking out of his window. And when I came across this, I've dug in. I've tried to look up any verse I can find. I've tried to research it. And nowhere have I found a verse in the Bible where Isaac or Abimelech is quoted as saying, roll tide. So, him caressing his sister here would have seemed a little weird, all right? So, just keep in mind, Abimelech's like, this doesn't seem right here. So, verse 9. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety, she is thy wife. And how saidst thou, she is my sister? And Isaac said unto him, because I said, lest I die for her. So, he's just explaining to Abimelech, I thought that the people here would kill me. So, verse 10. And Abimelech said, what is this thou hast done unto us? One of the people might lightly have lined with thy wife, and thou shouldest have brought guiltiness upon us. So he's saying, again, they've been there a long time. It wasn't just the next day. And he's saying, you've been lying and saying that this is your sister. One of the people of my country could have went and been with your wife and would not have had any guilt over it. You're saying she's a single woman and just your sister. So verse 11. And Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he that toucheth this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. So here we're seeing that God will protect us no matter what, and he will use whoever he wants to protect us. Even through our own self-reliance, when we want to try to control things ourselves, he will help us, and he will protect us from the wickedness of the world. Now, I've ran into situations where I have a family member or friend that's going in for surgery or something of that nature, and like, well, we're going to pray for them and hope that everything goes well. And they'll ask, well, what if the doctor is an atheist and they don't believe? that doesn't matter. God will use whoever he wants to. If you're going in for a surgery and we pray for that to be okay, he will move through that atheist doctor if he needs to. And that's what it's showing here. Abimelech is not a follower. He's a foreign king in this area. But it shows that Abimelech is protecting them because that's God's will. Now, verse 12. Then Isaac sowed in the land and received the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. So here we see the famine ending. We can actually, when you look at historical documents, it shows that it wasn't just for Isaac. God's starting to bless that entire area. And we can kind of equate that to, if you're around someone that is following God and they're receiving the blessings, it spreads out. It will start touching the lives around all of us that are following. So that's what we see there. Now, during his time in that area, Isaac's farming a piece of land which was productive through the blessings of God. And we can take that as an example for us, that no matter what we face, no matter what famine we're in, he can provide for us. And we actually see that laid out in Psalms chapter 37, verse 19. And just always remember this verse if you're having a hard time. Psalms 37, verse 19, it says, "They shall not be ashamed in the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied." In the days of famine, they shall be satisfied. So no matter what's going on around us in this world, if we are walking with God, he will take care of us. So verse 13. "And the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great." This just meaning God is blessing him. He's gaining wealth. He's gaining power. God's watching out for him. Verse 14. "For he had possession of flocks and possessions of herds and great store of servants, and the Philistines envied him." So store there means body. He had a great body of servants. He had a lot of servants. And so the amazing growth of Isaac's wealth here and his flocks and herds and servants, it's awakening the envy and jealousy in the Philistines. And jealousy, envy, is one of the most powerful forces at work even to this day. And it even lays this out in Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 27, verse 4, it says, "Wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy?" Envy and jealousy will be the downfall of life after life if you allow it to get into your heart. If you start watching things around you and trying to follow that because you're jealous, you will let Satan take control of your life. And that's what we're seeing here. The Philistines are becoming jealous because of what Isaac has going on. So verse 15. "For all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth." So they're so jealous of what Isaac is doing that those wells that Abraham had dug in the area, they went and covered them over. You've got to think, this is a desert area. All these people could be using this water, and they're so jealous they're willing to just cover up the wells. Now, when you dug a well in that time, it kind of gave you a little bit of ownership. You've dug this well here. You're getting water in a place where it's not readily available. So think about if you're in a desert area and you've dug a well here. You've got water. So we know, we've seen in earlier chapters, that the young women go out and draw water for the town. We also know that the young men go out and water the flocks and the herds. So that well kind of becomes a gathering place. It's a center of life. Because, I mean, think about it. Wherever the young women are, that's where the young men are going to be, right? So everybody's gathering there. Well, what's happening here is the Philistines are seeing that they've got these wells, and they're worried. If there's a well, a town's going to pop up around it. They're going to start building their encampment here, and we don't want that. So verse 26. "And Abimelech said unto Isaac, Go from us, for thou art much mightier than we." So they're jealous to the point that they're telling him to leave the area. Now, we may want to question, well, why didn't Isaac put up a fight here? Why didn't he say, no, we've dug these wells, we're staying? But we can look back into history in this time, and it was kind of a common practice. What would happen was the Syrian shepherds would settle for a year or two in a place, and they wouldn't buy the land. Kind of going back to what Zach taught about Abraham wanting to own the cave. He didn't want to just be given it or rent it. I want to own it because that makes it legal. Well, these shepherds would rent the ground. They didn't own it. So they would start farming the land and producing things and start trading with the neighboring markets. Then the owners would become jealous. They would see that the land's been tilled now, and they would refuse to renew the lease. So now you've got the land producing, we're going to push you off the land, and now I have a farm that's producing that I did none of the work for. But it was kind of the common practice at the time, and that's kind of what's happened with Isaac here. He didn't own the land. They're saying, hey, you've got it to produce, but now it's time to move on. So he didn't really have a legal ground to stand on to stay. So 26, verse 17. "And Isaac departed thence and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there." So we see Isaac just leaving. The valley's going to be further from the settlements. And if you study with Shepherd's Chapel, Pastor Murray will hit here and say, well, the valley's more fertile. It's better land. But I think Pastor Murray's kind of looking at what we see in America and what we have going on here. If you look at the valleys in that area, it's actually what's called a wady, W-A-D-Y, wady, which is an area that there is a river during rainy seasons. When it's not rainy, it is dry and barren. So Isaac is actually going to an area that's not very fertile. And I think that really at the end of the day, it doesn't matter a whole lot if we're thinking it's more fertile or not. But to me, it made sense that he's going somewhere that's not, and that shows the power of God blessing him somewhere that it doesn't have what he needs. So verse 18, and Isaac digged again the wells of water. So he's redigging these wells, which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham, and he called their names after the names by which his father had called him. So he's naming the wells by the same names that Abraham had. Now, there's a couple of things happening here. So the naming of the wells by Abraham and the rights that that would have given Isaac through him inheriting it. Again, if you dig a well, eventually it's kind of implying some ownership. Then the Philistines go and cover up the wells and try to change the names. And now Isaac is restoring those names. So what this is showing is this kind of tug of war back and forth between them over this land. And we've got to remember that God has already promised that these lands will belong to this family. So they're going to have God on their side here. Now, we also see that Isaac's a pretty calm, cool, and collected person. We show that he's trusted that God will guide him. He shows his obedience in earlier chapters. Whenever Abraham said, go and find Isaac a wife, he didn't fight about it. He was okay with it because we will actually see that Esau is going to go out and find his own wives. He's not going to allow the betrothal. So Isaac was calm with that. He wanted to follow Abraham's footsteps into Egypt. So he's kind of following the plans that are laid out for him. He doesn't deviate a whole lot. So it just shows kind of the mentality he had, that he didn't really let a whole lot get to him. In verse 19, and Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water. So that's why I wanted to hit on this being an area that didn't have a lot of water, that was not fertile. Because Papa and I had a conversation about this past week. We can take this and what does it symbolize? Christ is the everlasting water, that springing well that will be for us no matter where we're at. If we're in a famine, he will be the water that we need. So just let that symbolism there really sink in, that no matter what's going on in your life, as long as you have Jesus with you, you'll have that well of springing water even in a desert. So verse 20, and the herdmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdmen, saying, the water is ours. And he called the name of the well Essek, because they strove with him. So they dig the well, and of course, the natives come in and say, nope, this is ours. You've done the work, now we want it. We even see that in the name there. Essek in the Hebrew, that I have here on the side, is strife or contention. So he names that well Strife. We're having problems here, so we're just going to move on. Verse 21, and they digged another well, and strove for that also, and he called the name of it Sitna. So they move on, they dig another well, and here come the natives again, pushing them off the land. And in Hebrew there, Sitna means opposition. So again, he names it, they came in and opposed us, we've got to move on. Verse 22, and he removed from thence, and digged another well, and for that they strove not, and he called the name of it Rehoboth. And he said, for now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. So no one is giving him problems with this one. He's saying, we found space for us here. And the name he gives that in Hebrew, Rehoboth, is roominess. So the names all point to what happened at each of these wells. They finally found space for themselves. Verse 23, and he went up from thence to Beersheba. Now that name should ring a bell. He's using the same names that Abraham had used. So he's going down to Beersheba. And we know what that was in Hebrew. We've talked about it. The well of the oath. This was the well where Abraham and the earlier Abimelech, not this Abimelech, came together and formed a covenant that they would be at peace with each other. Now, I have a slide here I want to take a look at. I don't know how well you will be able to see it, but this is an overlay. You can overlay this over modern maps. And why I wanted to show this is because if you see down here is Beersheba. All the way at the top is Rehoboth. And the reason I wanted to lay this out is because it's easy in our minds to think, well, they went a couple hundred yards. They went a couple of miles. That shows you how far they had to move every time they left one of these wells. So this was not an easy journey, and Isaac was willing to put his faith in God even when it meant a hard time and a hard travel that he had to go through. So I just wanted to show, because in my mind I kept thinking, you know, oh, well, they dug a well here, they ran them off, they moved a couple blocks over, and that's not what happened. So verse 24, and the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. So we see that covenant being brought forth again. He's telling him, I'm going to be with you. Things will be okay. So verse 25, look at what Isaac does here after God promises him he'll be okay. And he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants digged a well. The first thing he does is praise and thank God for being with him. Now this is the first record we actually have of Isaac building an altar in the Bible. And we're seeing Isaac keeping God involved in his life. No matter what's going on, he keeps God involved and gives him things. And remember, by digging this well, he's now showing some level of ownership in this land as well, which again, symbolizing that God has promised this land will eventually be yours. And it's also easy for us to think, well, he dug the well in the same exact spot that Abraham had, just they covered it over, he dug the same well. That's not necessarily the case. He named it the same thing, it's in the same general region, but it's not necessarily the same exact well. So think about all the wells we just saw them dig, and that digging a well is supposed to show a little bit of ownership. And now this lineage that has been promised they will have this country has dug well after well after well through the whole region, showing they're going to own all this. God will fulfill that promise. Verse 26, then Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Ahazath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. So this is kind of the same thing here where these are all titles. These are not names because we saw Phicol earlier as well. Now that's probably an official military title. I think it's like a captain of his armed forces here. So it actually lists him as the chief captain of his army. So we saw back in Genesis 21 verse 22 where Abraham has met with Abimelech and Phicol then. Again, these are not the same people. It's just the same titles. There's actually a lapse of about 90 years at this point from when they made that oath to this happening. Now, one of the things I want to hit on here as well is the Ahuzath. That name is possessions. And so when I was looking at this as far as if it's titles and thinking about why is Abimelech here, what is he trying to do, I think we could probably translate that to modern like treasurers. So what is a treasurer? It's someone that is over the finances, over the possessions of the kingdom. So you have the king, the person that's over all of his finances and possessions, and the leader of his army going to meet Isaac. So we got to think, Isaac's going to question, why is this the meeting that you want to have with me? And again, we can see the example has already been set forth by Abraham. We should know what's going on here. They're coming to try to seal an oath with them. They want to make a treaty. So verse 27. And Isaac said unto them, wherefore come ye to me, seeing ye hate me, and have sent me away from you? You hate me, you've moved me away from every well that I've dug. Why are you coming to me now? Verse 26. And they said, we saw certainly that the Lord was with thee. And we said, let there be now an oath betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee. So that saw certainly, you see there at the beginning, we saw certainly that the Lord was with thee. That is actually a figure of speech that's used to put emphasis on something. So what this is saying is God is moving in Isaac's life so much that all of the people around him can see it. And I think that we see that even in modern times. You can look and see when someone is being blessed by God and God moving in their life. And so they see God blessing Isaac and they're just saying, we don't want to have any part of that if they want to come back and make war with us. We want to make sure that we have peace with them because we can't stand up to someone that has God at their back. And that still holds true for us to this day. God promises that he will give us the power to overcome all of our enemies. So if God's with you, no one can come against you. Verse 29. That thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, as we have done unto thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace. Thou art now the blessed of the Lord. So they're trying to emphasize, hey, we didn't go to war with you. We didn't hurt you. But, I mean, they've pushed them off of every piece of land they've been at. So they've pretty much done everything they can up to actual physical warfare and keep pushing them away. But now remember, there's only one person here that needs this covenant, and it's Abimelech. Isaac does not need this covenant. He has God with him. Abimelech is the one that's traveled now to make the covenant because he sees that he needs some type of legal protection because God is with Isaac. Verse 30, and he made them a feast, and they did eat and drink. So Isaac showing hospitality here. Someone that has pushed him off of land and been very hostile to him, and Isaac says, it's okay, I'm going to feed them, and we're going to make this covenant, and I'm going to let them dwell here with me. Verse 31, and they rose up betimes in the morning and swore one to another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. So they make the oath, they have the night where they have their feast together, and the next morning they're leaving, and everything is peaceful. Verse 32, and it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged, and said unto him, we have found water. So showing Isaac trusting in God, being peaceful, not trying to fight with Abimelech, that God still moving with them and bringing even more water to them, that they're going to have everything they need. Verse 33, and he called it Sheba. Therefore the name of the city is Beersheba unto this day. Now, Sheba means an oath. We've already looked at that. And something I want to hit on here is that we're going to see a lot in the Bible where things will either be renamed to a name that they had earlier, or they're going to be renamed to a new name for a different reason. So that the names always mean something. We're going to see that in Genesis 21:31, where it said, wherefore he called that place Beersheba, because there they swear both of them. And we see that same name being used here. Now later in Genesis 28:19, we've already started talking about the way that names will change. One of those that we'll see is the place of Bethel. We've all probably heard Bethel. But the name of that city was first called Luz, L-U-Z. So the name was changed for a purpose. And in chapter 32, we're going to see Jacob, that we've already been talking about, being renamed Israel, the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. So just remember that names mean something, and sometimes they change to show us something. So we need to study those things. But now, there's something I wanted to touch on there, where it says, the name of this city is Beersheba unto this day. It says, unto this day, this place is still called Beersheba. So I'm going to take a look at something here. So these are the ruins of Beersheba. This is the well that was dug. So we can see that we still know where it's at. It's pretty modern. They've taken a picture. So we see Beersheba. The Bible told us it'd be Beersheba unto this day. But now if we zoom that picture out a little bit, the area right in the middle is that well. And if you can look down the bottom right corner there, you see modern buildings. You can see roads in the background. You can see bridges that have been built. This is not a mythological place. This is not somewhere that has been lost to time. We can pinpoint it right to this day. Just as the Bible said, it will be called Beersheba unto this day. It still is. There is a large modern city built just outside of this picture. They call it Beersheba. They pronounce it with a V. But so this place, we know where it is. So when the Bible says unto this day, it means unto this day. Now these next verses, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to leave Isaac, and now we're going to be back with Jacob and Esau. So verse 34. And Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. So what we're seeing here is part of the reason why Esau is not the line through which Christ would come. Remember, it had to be that pure bloodline that had to be coming all the way from Adam, Et-Hahadam. This is actually him marrying some Canaanites. These are the people that Abraham said, you can't let Isaac marry one of the Canaanites. Go and find him some from my bloodline. And the very next generation is just marrying into those people anyway. So Esau is bringing two idolatrous wives into their family. And these names are actually going to change. So we're going to see these people later in the Bible, but they won't be called by these names. Judith is going to be Aholibama. And Beeri there, her name, her father, was actually called Anah, A-N-A-H. And the name there, Beeri, is Spring Man. And it looks like that's probably a nickname. He discovered some hot springs. So they're probably just referring to him by a nickname there. And then Bashemath has a second name, Adah. So Bashemath is actually dropped in chapter 36 when we get there, because there's another person by this name. So they start calling this one Adah, so that way we can separate the two. But again, we've just got to remember that names will change, and we have to be able to tie those together to know that if we're talking about the same person. So verse 35, which were a grief of mine unto Isaac and to Rebekah. So he's talking about those two wives being a grief to his parents. They know that Isaac was told to marry into the bloodline. They're trying to bring forth the bloodline of Christ. And Esau, the firstborn, has already kind of ruined that here. So that's why they're upset. Grief of mind means bitterness of spirit. And we've got to remember who the Canaanites are. This was not just another tribe, and they're like, well, just don't marry that tribe. We saw the flood of Noah was to do away with the Rephaim, the hybrids that came from the Nephilim, the fallen angels. The people that are dwelling in Canaan here are Rephaim. We're already seeing the hybrids again. This is Satan trying to use the same plan he had before. Send the fallen angels to sleep with the daughters of man. That way you have those hybrids to ruin the bloodline. That's why this is such a big deal that Esau has married those women. So what I wanted to look at this, we've seen Isaac go around, dig wells, try to follow God's word, and God blessing him. So what I really want us to think about is take this lesson, and in what ways can we maintain our faith during a time of personal famine? What can we draw from his example and put forth in our life with the hardships we face each and every day? So just keep that in mind this week of how can we take his example there. So do we have any questions? Any comments?